Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And since we're here, I'm going to make a request. And I think that it's one that I don't make enough, and I think that it will be helpful to you. It is helpful to us. But a lot of people say, oh, did you put out a campfire this week? And I'll say, yes, I did. And they say they missed it. Well, there's one way to make sure that you never miss a new episode of The Campfire, and that is to actually go in and subscribe. And if you're an Apple user, you can do this on iTunes. You click on subscribe, or you can also subscribe via the podcasts app for the iPhone and the iPad. And if you're on the Android side, there are very many great apps. Particularly, I like the app called Casts, C-A-S-T-S, for the Android. It is a fabulous podcatcher. And actually, I even use it sometimes on iOS, although I do mainly use the Apple Podcast app. But it is a fabulous app, and I really think you should check it out if you're on Android. I think it'll be very useful to you. Plus, you can always tune in via my app, Jim Harold Central, but I like that subscription model. That way it's in with the rest of your podcast. Never miss it. Make sure to subscribe. And in all disclosure, it helps us too, because it helps get the attention of the good folks over at iTunes. So without any further ado, we have some great stories this week, and here they are. Jimmy is joining us next on The Campfire. He's calling from Pennsylvania. He's been listening via his Android phone on TuneIn Radio for a few years now. So don't think that just the iPhone people have all the fun. Lots of people listen on their Android, and there are a ton of great apps for it. And Jimmy has this really interesting story about when he was a bartender. Can't wait to hear it. Jimmy, welcome to the program, and tell us what happened.
Thank you for having me. I was a bartender, I'd say, roughly about 5 years ago. And it was a very old bar. It actually had a men's entrance and a ladies' entrance.
Wow.
Back in, you know, the older days, women weren't technically allowed to sit at the bar. And this was one of those bars that actually respected that rule, so to speak, until the late 80s. Okay, now back to the original story. Sorry,
sidetracked
a little bit. Now I was dating another bartender at this time, and she would shut down, you know, when she got slow, and it usually coincided when I would shut down around 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And she would leave her bar, come to my bar, and, you know, we'd sit, and after, you know, I cleaned up and stuff, we'd have a few drinks. And we're sitting at the bar as the customers would, and we're on the swivel back chairs, and I'm turned facing her, and she's turned facing me, and we're talking about, you know, whatever the subject was at that time. And now behind her, there was a doorway, like with a half circle on the top, and we had a curtain rod to, you know, keep it, keep the access out of, you know, keep the customers out of the kitchen area. And as we're talking, I noticed a ghostly hand reach out and gesture to me to, like, come here. And she apparently saw the look on my face, and she's insisting on, you know, what was that? What did you see? And I tried to play it off. I didn't see anything, you know, it's nothing. You know, just continue with your story. And she's like, no, what did you see? You know, you saw something. I guess I had a pretty freaked out look on my face. So I told her, I said, well, you know, there's some strange things that happen here. And, you know, a few seconds ago, there was a hand reaching out of the kitchen.
Huh.
And she had a bit of an interest in, you know, the paranormal. And we were a little brave. And, you know, she said, do you think we could get a reaction from whatever it was?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, I'm willing to find out. So, you know, I announced to nobody in particular, if you're here, make your presence known.
Mm-hmm.
And shortly after those words left my mouth, we heard what sounded like a cardboard box fall to the floor. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, that's neat. But you know, we need more. I said, all right, we need something bigger. You got to make your presence known. And then in the back, there's the big steel tubs. And it sounded like somebody smacked the side, not the sink, rather, not a tub. It sounded like somebody smacked the sink twice. Boom, boom. I'm like, all right, this is getting interesting. And, you know, she's getting a little freaked out. She comes in, you know, we're kind of, you know, huddled up and, you know, really interested now. And I said, okay, you got to do something bigger than that. You know, you really got to let us know that you're here. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I said that, there's a new jukebox sits in the corner. It's the computerized one.
Right.
It comes on. It fires up. It goes through its self-diagnostic. All the lights come on and, you know, it goes through. And, you know, that was like the, okay, guy, we're here. What more proof do you need?
Yeah, it's like, come on. I mean, you know, what do we got to do here? What's a ghost got to do to get some attention around this place?
Right. And I did live above the bar. And there was a few times, you know, I get up in the middle of the night, you know, you got to go to the bathroom. And a few times walking to and from, I would pass what looked like a black shadow.
Ooh.
And yet it wasn't really, I actually caught myself a few times saying, sorry, excuse me, let me come around you. And it was explained to me that it was the owner, Mike, his name was. Hmm. And the son said, yeah, that's just my dad. He sometimes walks the halls and, you know, just say hello and get out of his way and let him go about his business.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty neat. Well, you got to believe, I mean, it had to be an old bar with having those separate entrances like that. And you would think, you know, the thing that we always come back to, they say places that have a lot of emotion tend to kind of hold some kind of psychic energy. And certainly an old bar would, because you have happiness and sadness and partying, and then people who are there because maybe they want to have a drink. They're a little down in the mouth. So you have people of all sorts, all kinds of emotion, all kinds of people. So it seemed to be the kind of place that might just be haunted, and it sounds like you met up with one of those places.
Yes, it was quite an interesting experience.
Jimmy, thank you for listening and for joining us on The Campfire.
Thank you.
We have a return caller on The Campfire. Chris from Texas joins us, and she has a story about a strange occurrence on the USS Lexington. Chris, welcome back to the program, and tell us what happened.
Well, my friend Mandy and I, one of my friends from college, had gone down to visit her family and decided to take a tour of the Lexington because despite her being from the Corpus Christi area, she had never been. So I was like, okay, we'll go. Like, I had gone with my husband before. I was like, so I'll just kind of be sort of a docent for you mm-hmm. on the trip. And, you know, I think most people who are into ghost stories and sort of enthusiasts of that ship know that there have been stories here and right. there about hauntings up for overnights and just tourists. And we kind of had an occurrence, and it was more of a sense that I got. We were down in the forecastle area mm-hmm. and up from the anchor, there's a hallway. And I kept telling her, Mandy, like, I feel like something is telling me to go down that hallway. And so she's like, really? I said, yeah. And I didn't know what it was. It kind of drew me that way. So we went down the hallway, got sort of midway through. There was a door that I just felt compelled to stop in front of that door. And I was like, that's weird. It was dented. There was a padlock and it was a dented door. And I was like, we thought nothing of it. We just thought it was kind of strange. So we go on about the rest of the tour of the rest of the ship, and we're up in the captain's quarters, and there was a gentleman in there who was sort of an official
mm-hmm.
tour guide, and he had introduced himself as such, and he goes, I kind of do the off-the-beaten-path tours. He's like, are y'all interested in ghost stories? And we're like, of course we are. So he was taking us to a ship and told us a couple of things about the captain's quarters. And we didn't remember. Well, we end up down in the forecastle area mm-hmm. again. And where he's like, well, there have been some occurrences down here. And he takes us through the hallway and stops us in front of the door mm-hmm. and said to us that there had been some people who were renovating that part of the ship, working that part of the ship one day, and heard voices from behind that door.
Ooh.
Or a voice, like someone had been trapped in there and locked in there and was screaming to get out and hollering and hollering. And they were like, who's in there? And wouldn't say the name. He was like, please help me get out. So they tried, they went, and somebody had like kicked the door, hence the dent in the door.
Ooh.
And they opened it and no one was in there. And we both freaked out because it was the exact spot and the exact door I had had a sense about earlier in our roamings around.
Ooh.
So we both kind of got a really weird vibe off of that. Well, you know, he kind of confirmed it. We both got goosebumps and he's like, you picked up on that. I was like, I guess I did.
I guess you did. So, well, do you consider yourself to be sensitive to these things?
To an extent. A lot of the time what ends up happening with me is kind of a precognition of things. But I have seen things that actually I had another really vivid occurrence in a place that I used to work in South Texas that mm-hmm. was witnessed by other people in the room. We were having an open house for a program we were running, and we'd always heard all of us that worked in there had things happen, like files move and then show up somewhere else, or batteries would disappear and show up in somebody else's office, or we'd hear moaning coming from the back room where there was a kitchen and nobody was at half the time. Well, we were standing and talking, and three of us heard like hard sole shoes on tile.
Ooh.
In the room behind us, but nobody was in there. And it's an open doorway to that room. So we could have seen, well, right. They would have seen, my back was to the doorway. My coworkers would have seen somebody walking up behind me, and nobody did. So just things like that. But no, for most of my life, I've had like senses about things, have seen some things, precognition about stuff. Fairly sensitive for the most part.
Well, a couple of really interesting stories. And Chris, I thank you for returning to the show. We didn't scare you away.
Of course not.
And so glad that you had some time to share with us. And please call us back and let us know of any other odd happenings that come to mind or happen in the future.
Okay, I will do for sure.
You're listening to this program, so you obviously love paranormal podcasts, but if only there were a way to get access to more than 950 more of these type of podcasts that are not on the free Jim Harold feeds. Well, I have news, and it is good news. There is a way to get access to those programs and more today with my Paranormal Plus Club at jimharold.net. Now, there are three great reasons to sign up. First of all, you get access to those 950 episodes, many of which have never been on the free feed, that include exclusive plus series like Ghost Insight, UFO Encounters, The Other Side, Crime Scene, and Conspiracy Corner. Plus, you get the archived paranormal podcast and campfire episodes that go all the way back to 2005 and 2009, respectively. Then, on top of these extra podcast, you get great Plus Club exclusive video webinars, both archived and live. And this is one of my favorite features that people don't take advantage of. They spend hundreds of dollars to go to conferences, but don't realize they've got the same type of content right at the Plus Club. Now, right now, you can go and watch 24/7 conference quality presentations on subjects like ghost hunting, UFOs, communicating with the dead, tarot, and much more. Black-eyed kids. It's just a great, great feature that I don't think people use enough. These are all available 24/7, but only to members. Plus, we have the live webinars. That's where we get the recordings from, where you can actually sit in and ask questions of presenters. Now, the next one is actually coming up on Monday, March 23rd, and it'll be about Bigfoot with our special presenter, Eric Altman. And then you get other Plus Club goodies, including virtual meets and greets with me. So I come on the line and talk to you for a little while, answer your questions, give you updates and those kind of things. And I kind of agonized over this message because I've not been promoting the Plus Club as much lately. I've been kind of saying, well, if people are interested, they'll come to it. And when I stopped promoting it, signups went down. And it is really important if you value these types of programs. Now, despite what many think, I am just a very small operation. I'm basically a one-man band. Now, I do have people that I have help me with my appointment bookings and maybe some artwork and things, but I'm basically a one-man company. I'm not a big conglomerate. And your participation in the Plus Club literally is the main source of support for my family. So without that continued support, the podcast, both free and premium, would stop. And I just go back to a traditional job because family comes first, and then the podcasts would cease. But we're optimistic that you guys will keep supporting us. So let's keep the paranormal party going. Please consider joining my Paranormal Plus Club today. Monthly and yearly options are available. And for a limited time through April 5th, use the coupon code SPRING15 to get $10 off of a yearly subscription. Make sure you, before you check out, you hit add and you add that in, SPRING15 to get $10 off a yearly subscription. And of course, our monthly option is available as usual at normal price. We thank you so much for listening. I hope you'll consider checking out my Paranormal Plus Club. Go over to jimherold.net. There's a banner at the top of the page, and that can start the process by clicking on it. Thank you so much.
Attention iTunes listeners. Your iTunes reviews put Jim's shows in the spotlight. If you enjoy Campfire, the Paranormal Podcast, and the Paranormal Report, please go to iTunes today and rate the shows. Plus, be sure to write a 2 or 3 sentence blurb on why they are the best paranormal podcasts on the planet. Thanks for your help in spreading the word. Jim appreciates it. And now, back to the show.
Well, we have a return caller. I did not scare her away from last fall. Erin is back from California. And now she's going to tell us about a visit she had to the Whaley House in San Diego. I was not familiar with this place. So, Erin, can you tell us a little bit about the Whaley House and your experience in it? And thank you for joining us again.
Thank you. Yes, the Whaley House is in San Diego, and it's reported to be very haunted. It's on the scale of the Winchester House here in California. Mm-hmm. It has a similar distinction. Basically, from what I can remember, the Whaley House was owned by the Whaley family back in the 1800s. And yeah, everything, it was like the center of town. You know, they had a they actually have a courthouse in the actual house itself because they used to have trials there. That's all that I can really remember about the actual history of the place. But I know that a lot of the family do haunt the house that still stands in Old Town.
Okay.
I first went a few years ago with my mom. We went to go take a haunted tour. And what they did was they showed you upstairs where they had this little theater, and there was a woman dressed in black. And she started telling all about all the ghosts that haunt the Whaley House. Now, the moment we entered the door, I felt very sad, very, it was like doom, the sense of doom. And there was nothing I could do to change it. And I just had to give in to that fact. And so we go upstairs and I felt a little bit better. And as we're listening to the woman with the stories, there was nobody sitting behind me, and I was sitting next to a wall. And all of a sudden I heard what sounded like someone grabbed the wallpaper next to my ear and just ripped it off the wall.
Oh, my goodness.
And I immediately practically jumped on my mom. And she said, what is it? What is it? I'm like, you didn't hear that? I said, it sounded like somebody ripped the wallpaper. And she goes, I didn't hear a thing. And I'm looking around the rest of everyone else who's in the room. Nobody heard it. So I'm like, okay, this is weird. And I'm on edge the whole time. we finally go back downstairs, and at the time they used to wander through the house to go take pictures and just see what there is to see. And when I got back down to the hallway, they're off to the right-hand side when you walk in the door is a parlor, and they have a lot of antiques in there. So there's a velvet rope cordoning off that section of the house so that you can't go in and touch the antiques, but you can still look in there. And again, get downstairs. I feel fearful. I feel like there's a sense of doom, for lack of a better word. I just don't feel right. So I'm kind of standing there in the hallway, and I told my mom, you go look around. I'm not in the mood for it. I don't feel right here. I'm ready to go when you are.
Mm-hmm.
And so she went to walk around the house. Meanwhile, I hear another visitor kind of shriek out, oh my God, the chair is moving. And so one of the docents goes into the parlor where there's this rocking chair. And I'm wearing a sweatshirt that has sweatshirt strings, you know, down the front of it from the drawstring of the hoodie.
Right.
And I lean in to look through the doorway over the velvet rope. And I'm looking off to my right, and the docent, he pushes the rocking chair back, and it rocks back and stops. Mm. And one of the docent goes, oh, they must be active tonight. And as soon as he said that, the drawstrings on my sweater get flipped up into my face. And I wasn't around anyone. I was by myself in that one section, and I hadn't moved. So something flicked my little drawstrings up to almost hit my face.
I got it.
At that moment, I just stood up and I walked straight out.
And it's just frightening to think that you're in a place that there's actually something going on, and you're seeing, you're feeling a physical manifestation of an emotional manifestation, and then you see these drawstrings flip up. It had to be, you know, even though it sounds like you're obviously interested in this material, you listen to this program, it's one thing to talk about it in the abstract, and then there's something else about experiencing it, isn't there?
Definitely. And I actually went back about a year later with my mom again. We were down in that area, and I wanted to see if I could experience the stuff again. And on that tour, it was just a normal tour of the house. I had no feeling whatsoever while I was there. But it was on that tour that the area where I felt dreadful was where they used to hang people. There used to be a large tree there where they would hang the people, and then later they chopped down the tree and built the parlor over it.
Right.
So to extend the house. So I attribute feeling that way with what used to be there. And on later visits with my husband, we have also caught an EVP of somebody whistling. Mm-hmm. And my husband was the only one in the room, and he cannot whistle. So I knew that it wasn't him. And then I also have a photo of my husband. He was on crutches because he just had knee surgery. And there's a swirling vortex in front of him with these lights. And at the time, I didn't see anything, but I saw it when I went back home and put the image on my computer. It's clearly there. He's out of focus, and it's all blurry, and there's light. So that is my story.
Well, thank you so much for coming back on the show and sharing such a powerful story. We certainly appreciate. Don't be a stranger if you have any other strange experiences, and it's good to know that folks are out there like you listening and contributing, and we thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Jim.
We have Chris from the state of Texas. He's been listening for about a year, says he likes any kind of horror-based podcast, and maybe this story is very apt because it's a story about, of all things, a haunted TV. Now, we've had a couple of these over the years, not many of them, so I can't wait to hear it. Chris, welcome to the program, and tell us about this haunted television.
Thank you. Well, when I was a kid, about 8 or 9 years old, my grandpa used to have this old Zenith TV that was a, back then it was a newer model when the remotes first came out.
Yeah.
And all, the only thing it would do, the remote would be to turn the TV on and off. You had to manually turn the channels for the TV.
Mm-hmm.
It had two knobs. It had a VH channel and then your regular TV channel. And all the remote did would turn the TV off and on.
Yeah.
So he used to watch Channel 8 all the time.
All right.
And when we were kids and stuff, we would watch, you know, Channel 13, educational TV and stuff. And we would watch his TV, and then we would forget to turn it back to his channel. So he'd get in bed, and he'd turn the TV on, and it'd be on 13. So he'd be like, oh, shucks, and he'd have to get up and then go manually turn the TV back to Channel 8.
Yeah.
Well, he ends up passing away, and so he passed away, and a couple months go by, and we'd be watching the TV, and we'd leave it on our channel, and then the next day we'd come by or something, and it'd be on Channel 8.
Mm-hmm.
And we know in the house, it was just me and my grandmother, that we didn't put it on that channel.
Right.
And then one night we were about to go to bed, and we could hear a click, and it sounded like the TV, when you turn the channel, that makes a clicking noise. And I get up out of bed, and I run over there, and it's on Channel 8.
Huh.
Which... it wasn't on Channel 8. It was on Channel 13. So I get really freaked out. And I'm like, well, I get back in the bed and just, I don't say anything. I just, you know, totally freaks me out. So about a year or two go by, and then my grandmother passes away. And so she passes away, and then... after time goes by, they end up moving some of the stuff out of the house. And the TV's a real nice TV. That's got the nice wooden cabinet and everything. So
right. Like a console.
My aunt, yes. So my aunt ends up, you know, inheriting some of the stuff. And they take the TV and they move it to her house. And I go with them, and... it ends up being in her house, and she puts, you know, sometimes people put stuff, like a coffee table, they'll put stuff over it, and they'll put knickknacks and pictures and stuff, you know,
right,
over it. It wasn't being used anymore. And I was probably about, I guess, 10 years old. And I'm over there visiting, and I'm looking at it. And for a good old time's sake, you know, I turn it back to 13 again. And I leave, and we come back to visit like 6 months later, and it's back on Channel 8. And nobody would know that, and nobody, you know, would touch the TV or anything like that. And it just really freaked me out. And that was my grandpa's favorite channel. So for some reason, I think, you know, he had something to do with that.
It sure seems like it.
Yeah.
You know, TVs don't do that by themselves.
No. I ended up, when I was older, I ended up looking at that TV, and I was so interested, I took the back off of it, and I was inspecting the knobs on the inside to see if I could find any springs or anything that would be turning that thing, and I couldn't find anything. You would have to manually turn that with your hand. So yeah. I just really thought that was crazy.
I always think these are interesting stories. Actually, there's a really interesting story out there. I sent it out in my recent, one of my recent email newsletters. the skeptic, Dr. Michael Shermer, who is a big skeptic and has been on our shows before. He was a very nice guy, but he doesn't believe in any of this stuff. But this last year, he was at a wedding, his wedding, and his soon-to-be wife said, she said something like she wished her deceased grandfather were able to be there. And all of a sudden, they have an old radio that had never been played recently. It had been broken, and it started playing. And they could only it only played that day, and then it stopped playing, and they could never get it to go again. And he even commented it made him think twice, you know, about his skepticism a little bit. And a credit to him that he's willing to admit that. But I love these stories about electronics. We had one with way back. Someone talked about a radio that started playing a particular song that had a meaning that had shorted out from like water or something. And it started playing. It was playing this one song while they were talking about this person. And we had somebody else who had a maybe a haunted TV. So I'm always fascinated by these. So, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your story and for being a part of the program and for listening.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on it.
Thanks, Chris. Great job. Next up on the campfire is Johnny from Colorado, and he has one of my favorite type of stories, is stories about his grandfather who passed, and just a really poignant story. Johnny's been listening for just about 2 weeks. He was listening to one podcast. They didn't have a lot of episodes. He's looking for something. He started Googling around and found the show, and we're so glad that he did. Johnny, welcome to the program, both as a listener and as a contributor, and tell us this this poignant story about your granddad.
Okay, well, thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be on the show. Yeah, so my grandfather, who I'm named after, he died in 1978 of skin cancer. He was a Marine. He fought at Iwo Jima, and he was a flamethrower there. So it was his job to,
right.
Have the flamethrower, and it's a pretty gruesome job. And
yeah.
I'm sure he was one of the few flamethrowers to survive that battle. But he did survive. And he left there and went to New Zealand for R&R.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where my grandma always said he got the skin cancer, in New Zealand, because there's the ozone hole and he had his shirt off all the time.
Right.
So that's my grandfather. And I never met him, since he died before I was born. But I have always felt something of a connection to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a presence in our family still. Many of my cousins say they feel a connection to him, even though none of them have ever met him. So, the story picks up right after I graduated from college. I didn't really have any idea what I wanted to do, and so I was doing a part-time job. Before and after school care. So I had to get up really early in the morning and get to the school at like 5 a.m. And so every morning when I woke up, I lived in my parents' basement, so I had to go up the stairs. And I just got this really creeped out feeling every time I was on the stairs, like I wasn't alone.
Right.
And it just kind of gave me the heebie-jeebies. So I ended up, every morning I would dash up the stairs as fast as I could. You know, and eventually my dad got annoyed with this behavior, and he was just kind of like, hey, you know, why are you making so much noise on the stairs in the morning?
Right.
So I that day I stood on the landing, and I was just trying to figure out, you know, where is this feeling coming from? And there's a little ledge on the landing, and on it is this drawing that one of my grandpa's buddies did for him. It's like of a flamethrower, a photograph of him.
Right.
And then the folded up flag that the army sent my grandma when he died.
Mm-hmm.
And so she left that to me. So it's kind of a interest. So once I noticed that those things were there, I felt much calmer about it. And the next day when I went to the school, when I went up the stairs, I didn't feel scared. I still felt the presence, but I didn't feel scared and I didn't have to run. But when I got to the school, I was there before anyone else. No one else was there. And I'm walking through the hallway, and I notice on the floor, there's one of those little green army men.
Yeah.
You know, like, with the connected feet.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was a flamethrower, you know. Yeah, it was a flamethrower, like the backpack and everything. So I just got the chill. I just remember getting the chills. And I picked it up and put it in my pocket. And when I got home, I put it on the ledge on the landing with the other objects. And so it was kind of a cool thing. And that was kind of it for a while. I eventually found a job and moved to Iowa. And I was there for about a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I came back I lived in my parents' house again. And I noticed, like, within a week of moving in, that the little figure had vanished from the ledge. And I didn't really think much of it. I just thought maybe my mom or my sister maybe had picked it up and had moved it, or they had cleaned it, or it just got misplaced.
Right.
So I was bummed out that I couldn't find it. And I asked my mom and my sister, and they didn't remember moving it. So I just kind of let it be. And so a few months after that, I was kind of in a new job that I didn't really like. I just lost a relationship. I was feeling pretty lost in my life at that time. And I felt like I needed some guidance. My parents didn't live in the house anymore. I was there by myself. I didn't really have anybody to hang out with or anything like that. And I just remember feeling very down, and I was on the phone with somebody. I'm not sure who. And I just remember I was standing in the kitchen, and I could see out towards the stairs at the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
I just happened to notice that the figure was back on the ledge.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember feeling like everything's going to be all right. And it ended up being okay. And the weird thing is that around that time, I kind of had this feeling like I needed to go to the dermatologist.
Right.
And I went, and there's a mole on my back in roughly the same area where my grandfather's had been, the one that ended up killing him.
Right.
And they did a test on it, and they gave me a call back and said, hey, it's a really good thing you came in, because this mole, you know, if you didn't left it alone, there's a 90% chance it would have become melanoma.
Wow.
In the next 10 years.
Wow.
So I rushed in, of course, and got it removed. And, yeah, so I guess I like to think that I have my grandfather to thank for kind of rescuing me from the same fate he had.
Wow. It's amazing how they communicate with us, the different ways that they do it. I mean, I think that there's this thought that it's always going to be something really dramatic, like a ghost walking in the room. But sometimes it could be a little more subtle, but just as meaningful.
Yeah, I think he knew exactly how to make me think and how to make me feel like I was, you know, in good hands, you know, that he was there, you know, with me, no matter how hard things were.
Well, thanks so much for sharing your story, Johnny, and welcome to the campfire.
Oh, thanks so much.
Christine from Colorado rejoins us. She's been on the program a couple of times lately. And the first story, I believe, she told us was one concerning her and her father. And she has yet another story that concerns her and her father that certainly hints at the supernatural. Christine, thank you for rejoining us once again. And please tell us the story.
Sure. I'm glad to be with you again. As you said, this takes place in the mountains, and my father was up in the mountains once again. And we consider an instance of the paranormal phenomena called a crisis apparition, which, as you know, Jim, is when the sender telepathically, you know, when they're under an extreme crisis, you know, just like if your life is being threatened, or, you know, you might be close to death, or you're certainly in a dangerous situation, that the sender is telepathically communicating with someone who's very close to them, and they can appear as an apparition to them. And that's what we consider this, and it's a pretty amazing experience for us.
Yeah, I've heard it called the third man factor.
Oh,
Yeah, I've looked that up. Google that.
I will.
And there's actually been a book written about it. And I need to have that gentleman on one of the shows. I heard him years ago on an old Coast to Coast with Ian Punnett. But yeah, there's something called the third man factor. So this is an identified phenomenon. But please tell us what happened.
I would definitely look at that. And if you can get that guest, I really encourage you to do that.
But tell us what happened.
Well, my father had been up in the mountains for several days, and he was he had just returned, and he had done another climb to the peak of the mountain as well as camping. That's what he frequently liked to do. It turned out to be an extremely strenuous one, and I would say particularly dangerous this time, but I didn't know it at the time until I would say it was several days later after he had returned, and we were having tea together, and I just started sharing with my father that I had a really unusual experience while he was up in the mountains, and in fact, it was on the night of the day that he had climbed to the mountain peak, and I told him that I had awoken, and I was just astonished because I saw my father standing in my bedroom. And he was telling me, and I mean audibly, I heard this, Jim, and he told me that he loved me.
Hmm.
And I saw him, I mean, just as clear as if he had walked in and had said this to me. And then he disappeared. And, you know, I pondered it. I was very sleepy, and I went back to sleep. And I just shared with my father while we were having tea that I'd had this unusual experience. And it was then that he told me that on that night when he was descending the mountain peak, he had a very similar experience, but from his perspective, and at the time until he heard me share what had occurred to me, he thought it must have been a vivid dream. But he said he had descended the mountain peak, and it was a time that his canteen was almost empty. So he had stopped eating in order to minimize his need for water. It was a very hot day, and he knew he had quite limited water. And he was already feeling ill because he was really, you know, in the initial stages of dehydration. So he went looking for water, and he found a mountain stream and was able, but it was icy cold water. And, of course, he was very thirsty at this point since he was suffering from dehydration. So he just drank this cold water. It became dark. And he was just exhausted. This time, to lighten his load, he had carried no sleeping bag or tent with him, just to make it a lighter backpack, you know, for climbing the peak. So all he had with him after drinking that icy water and being exhausted was a plastic sheet, something waterproof, you know, that he could sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at this time he said he started experiencing, a number of hypothermia symptoms. And he hadn't consumed any food, and so he wasn't generating any body heat. And so his body temperature was dropping, and he was extremely fatigued. And he believes in retrospect that it was producing a really dangerous hypothermia situation.
Hmm.
And he said now, looking back on it, you know, it was really unwise for him not to eat.
Right.
But anyway, that's what he had done. And so he went into this long, cold night, and the nights up in the mountains, even on a summer night, get really cold, especially if you're in that condition and had drank that icy water. So he put himself in that plastic sheet on the ground, and he was never aware of any, you know, really consecutive sleep, but just intermittent moments of unconsciousness, and really you wouldn't call that sleep. But he said he woke up one time, he felt as if he had just woken, and he was in my bedroom, just looking down, you know, upon me as I was sleeping. And then he told me that he loved me. And then he said he woke again. It was like he woke up again, and he was lying on the ground in the forest. And, and you know, he shared this only after I had told him I had the experience of waking up, and he was there telling me he loved me. And he had, until then, had thought it was a vivid dream. So anyway, dawn came, you know, it was a miserable night for him, and, you know, he continued back home. And so it was several days later when we both exchanged this experience with one another, and we found we had the exact same experience, and he was having the experience of telling me that he loved me and seeing me in my bedroom, sleeping in my bed, and when I woke and saw him standing there telling me. So to us, you know, Jim, this is, this kind of paranormal experience to us is evidence for the fact that we're not our bodies. We are spirit, and you know, spirit transcends all these, you know, physical limitations of space and time, because those don't actually, you know, exist. They're just illusions, concepts, And it really proved to us, you know, we are spirit. We are not our body. My body might be there in my room, in my bed. His body might be up there, you know, experiencing this miserable night and a dangerous night in terms of hypothermia. And yet he was able to communicate his love to me. And I saw him and I heard him and he saw me. And but until we exchanged that, we didn't know we both had the exact same experience.
Now, this is a little, first of all, it's a fascinating experience, but there's, it's a little bit different than what I was describing at the beginning. Now, the third man factor is, let's say that there are two people climbing a mountain and they feel that they're fearing for their life. It's very poor conditions. There have been cases where people have thought there was a third man, thus the name, like a spiritual being or another person who was helping them.
I see.
And that specifically, if people are familiar with it, so it's a there actually are some similarities there, but there's also some differences. So that is something we are going to look into getting them on the program. But your story kind of reminded me of that a little bit, not exactly the same thing, but
right. Well, thank you for the clarification. I mean, both are you know, fascinating experiences, and I think this one is called crisis apparition. If people want to look that up. And it usually occurs, and you can. And I'm interested in the what you are describing as well. And I know that there's, you know, numerous accounts of experiences like this when someone is in a very dangerous, you know, threatening their physical existence or well-being, and appearing to someone they love. And we learned it occurred with us when he was in that hypothermic state that night.
Well. Thank you again, Christine. Thank you for sharing this amazing story, and keep listening.
Oh, you better believe I will.
Goodbye, Jim. Thanks so much for tuning in to The Campfire. We appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope that you'll share your own story. Go over to jimherold.com/campfire. That's jimherold.com/campfire. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.